Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Game 3 is Wednesday. What could change between Game 1 and Game 2 that could help or hurt the Lakers? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends, especially during the playoffs. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is also where you can go to see the show, participate, communicate with a Lakers fan base over 15,000 subscribers strong. Just a bunch of NBA people in there. It's just a lot of fun. Great place to leave us questions. Great place to talk to each other. We try to use all of that stuff on the show. Do want to let people know that today's episode is brought to you by Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Speaking, Brian, by the way, of using comments for the show, and I didn't even tell you about this, but right off the bat, I have a bone to pick with you. Because I was going through the comments from both our mini game reaction show on the YouTube page and then the formal show. And I'm seeing one from somebody named For the Love of Cyberpunk and Sci-Fi. Nice handle, by the way. You can almost hear how much the Lakers winning irritated them in their voice and two crying emojis. And I'm like, the F are you talking about? Like, putting aside that the Lakers winning only increases our traffic and can actually
make money. I'll let you finish your sentence, but you just described my whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a massive Laker fan in real life. Like, Brian knows this. Well before this was ever my job, before I was ever in this industry, there is no team in sports I care about more than the Lakers. It's been this way for like 25 to 30 years. So I'm like, where is this coming from? I'm becoming like the Obama shrugging meme. I'm like, wait, what? So then I look further and somebody, L. Young, leaves the comment, I know it's only one game, but when we pick this series, I will be pulling your guys' coattails on how much you picked Memphis to win 2 days ago. And I'm like, my pick was Lakers in seven. I picked the Lakers to win. And then I realized, Brian, I'm getting dragged down by you. They are thrusting your Grizzlies in six pick and your lack of belief on me. So, like, send these complaints directly to Brian,
yeah.
Not me, not the person who both deeply wants them to win and said they will win. Like, if you need me to prove this next series that the Lakers advance, from now on, I'm picking them in every series. No question.
Lakers in three.
dude, they could be playing the Globetrotters, and I will pick them in that series.
Well, actually, like, I don't know. I might pick the Lakers against the Globetrotters now. I mean, I'm not sure really if the Globetrotters haven't played an NBA-style game. I mean, that's a totally different deal.
Dude, it's rigged. It's like it's a parlor game.
So a couple things about that.
Direct that to Brian, all right?
I can't lie to people. Serious worryment. But I said even after that pick, I hope to be wrong. I very much want to be wrong. And as Andy said, the Lakers winning, that's fine. That's fine. The Lakers winning is much better for business. I don't want to go into off-season mode. I want this thing to go. I want the Lakers to win. It's fun to cover a successful team and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I'm not one of these sports dudes who gets real upset like if a prediction he makes is wrong, especially if it's a prediction that I don't particularly want to happen. So, I was not upset with the Lakers for winning Sunday. I was quite pleased Cyberpunk or whomever, you're wrong.
I was upset by getting associated with you, quite frankly.
I mean, that's not the first time. Surely that's happened before. So plenty to cover in this episode, four and a half, give or take, to be precise. Plenty to cover in this episode, including some interesting results in the Defensive Player of the Year award voting, which, by the way, is relevant to this series because both of the guys I want to talk about are playing in this one. So we'll get to that. But first, the big news of the day, Monday, Woj, that's Adrian Wojnarowski saying there is, quote, significant doubt Ja Morant will play on Wednesday. That is obviously not technically Lakers news, but it obviously affects the Lakers, Andy. Not having Ja Morant would be a massive problem for the Grizz. They're still a good team. They played without Ja. They've done, but it's the playoffs. You're down 1-0. And to be without Ja Morant, that opens the door for the Lakers in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, as well as the Lakers, as the Grizzlies have done over the last couple seasons when Ja's been out, Tyus Jones is arguably the best backup point guard in the league. He's certainly among the handful of the best. But to put in perspective just the ceiling that you butt up against and also just what you lose without Ja, the Grizzlies' last playoffs went 1-2 against the Warriors when Ja got hurt. They had one blowout win, one tight loss, one run-of-the-mill, we're done series closing loss. And that was also a team that had Steven Adams, Brandon Clark, and Kyle Anderson, who was on the team and was very important to the team. That was a team that had better depth.
Well, look what happened at the end of game one. I mean, that the Lakers win that game. If you look at the scoreboard, you think, oh, man, they blew him out of the water. That was a tight game through, you know, well into the fourth quarter. And where the Lakers really dominated and pulled away was late in the fourth after Ja Morant went out is when they really started to assert their dominance, in part because the defensively, the Lakers really clamped down and made it difficult for Memphis to score. And, like, I think what you're talking about there, like the Kyle Anderson part of it, not a point guard, but a facilitator, a ball mover, a guy who greases the wheels. I'm a huge Kyle Anderson fan. It should be noted. And, you know, not having those guys. So you're down Clark. You're down Steven Adams. You already have problems with your front court depth. If Jaren Jackson Jr. gets in foul trouble, you know, we saw, you know, Tillman gets in foul. The Grizzlies have issues there. Now you're going one deeper into your backcourt as well. And I think Lakers fans understand this. It's the backups.
They've seen this movie before.
It's not necessarily, oh, my backup sucks. Although occasionally that does happen. The problem is too, now I got to give more minutes to the backup, to my backup. And most teams don't have three of those guys. So they can just, you know, yeah. Tyus Jones is a great luxury to play behind Ja Morant or with him or whatever. But, you know, now you're starting to get well into your depth and, you know, the David Roddys of the world in the front court and all that, good young players. And, you know, but you're out of whack in significant ways. And, you know, it's not a pushover game. You know, the Lakers have won games without LeBron and without AD, but in the playoffs, no Ja's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is incredibly dynamic, and he is a difficult matchup for every team in the league, including the Lakers.
So I know, though, this, you know, this would leave Memphis as a, I guess, sort of a one, depending on how you consider a, you know, Desmond Bain, a big 1.5. You know, you have Jaren Jackson Jr. leading the charge there.
Dylan Brooks would say it's a big 2.5.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, you know, the Lakers should, I mean, they did it a lot in game one where you saw that, like, you know, can we bait Dylan Brooks into a wide open three? I will say one time, you know, like Dylan didn't want to shoot the ball, which is rare, and they backed off so far he had to take a little dribble and shoot, and he made it, to his credit. But I hope that Dylan Brooks looks at the Ja Morant free Grizzlies and says, I have to fill that hole. Because if they do, the Lakers' chances of winning goes up significantly. Any game where Dylan Brooks takes 22 shots is a game that I am confident will not go that well offensively for the Grizzlies.
It reminds me of in 2010 when we were covering the Lakers-Suns Western Conference Finals, and the Suns were playing a strategy that was very obviously let Lamar Odom and Ron Artest take uncontested outside shots. Mm-hmm. Like, this was part of the plan. And Lamar was generally not forcing things. Ron forcing them a little more. And I asked Phil Jackson if those guys were aware that the Suns were trying to do this. And he's like, yes, wait, I've talked with Lamar. I've talked with Ron. I've told them there's a reason that you are open. So unless it is a shot that you absolutely have to take, find a better shot, keep the ball moving. You're both good passers. Like, let's look for something better. And I said, how is Ron doing with not taking the bait? And Phil said, not very well.
Smiling, by the way.
Yes.
Smiling. I remember that. But yeah, I mean, so that is the Dylan Brooks thing. Look, there's a, you know, probably a 25% chance that Dylan Brooks has the one, you know, one, you know, the one game where he's cooking. I'll take my chances. But it does lead to some interesting questions about the usage of Jaren Jackson Jr. that I know you have some questions about that I think we will get to next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Game Time. And years ago, some friends of mine and I, we wanted to go see LL Cool J at the House of Blues when it was still open in LA. Really last minute, had no idea how to get tickets. Ended up buying some from a scalper. They were fake. And it was only through some totally random luck that we actually got into the show, but we vowed
E-L-E-L-K-O-O-L-J-A-Y. I can't imagine why that happened.
And then the tickets were envelopes. But I said to myself after that, I will never, ever put myself through that again. And you don't have to, because Game Time exists. They keep tickets from your favorite events to become a stressful experience. They are the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy shows, theater near you, killer deals on last minute tickets, best price guarantee, and you can stop stressing over the tickets. You can get hyped for the fun. I love how they offer images of seat views, because that's key. A bad angle makes the whole experience awful. You get the low price guaranteed, event cancellation protection, job loss protection. Game Time guarantee means you will always get the best price. And if you find tickets in the same section or row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. That is confidence that they have the best deal. There's a reason it is the fastest growing ticket app in the country. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds. Two taps, tickets go directly to your phone. So snag tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
So we'll get to this Jaren Jackson Jr. Defensive Player of the Year thing. If you missed the news on Monday, Jaren Jackson Jr. was named the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. No shock there. But it was interesting because Anthony Davis got a grand total of 0 votes. Despite, and I didn't realize this, but despite playing, I think 200 more minutes, give or take, than Jaren Jackson Jr. played this season. So, an interesting development there, but, I know Andy, he played really well. Jackson had a really good game offensively for the Grizzlies on Sunday. You would think he becomes much more a focal point, so him and Bane as much as you can get, in game 2. And I know that is something that you are at least slightly concerned about.
Well, the area where I think the Grizzlies had the most success offensively against the Lakers was when Jaren Jackson Jr. was posting up or playing down low and defended by anybody but Anthony Davis. He was 10 of 14 on shots between the circles or closer, defended like Rui Hachimura, Jared Vanderbilt. They were game, and I thought they did a good job when they were able to keep him further from the paint. But the closer he got into the lane, he's just too big for those guys. He overwhelmed everybody. He overwhelmed LeBron. He was 4 of 5.
He was not a small man.
Well, he was 4 of 5 while defended against Rui, 6 of 7 while defended against LeBron, and 3 of 3 while defended against Jared Vanderbilt, 1 of 6 against Anthony Davis. And it got me thinking, if Ja is unavailable, I wonder if the Grizzlies will go even more towards that look, or frankly, maybe even if Ja plays, especially if he's limited, because it was really effective. And from there, how do the Lakers go about dealing with that? I mean, you could just say the obvious choice is put Anthony Davis on him more, but there can be a potential price paid for that when it comes to just foul trouble for AD, you know, having to occupy him with so much space, Jaren Jackson, all that stuff.
Well, a couple things here. First of all, I think there is one potential solution, particularly if Ja doesn't play, is fine. You know, Jaren, you know, to, you know, you work hard to make entry passes difficult, to cut off angles and stuff like that. And if, and, you know, just accept, like, you know what, Jaren Jackson Jr. might have another game where he scores 31 points and is really effective in the lane. And okay, that's fine. Because without Ja there, we're going to bank on Dylan Brooks being, as he was in game one, 5 of 13 or 6 of 19 or something like that, trying to fill the vacuum. You know, we're going to keep an eye on Bane. And outside of that, if, you know, Santi Aldama comes in and has the game of his life, you live with it. In the same way that I would imagine Memphis is sort of like, okay, Rui Hachimura went 11 for 15 and 5 of 6 from 3. Let's see if he can do it twice.
I mean, Desmond Bane literally said, let's see him do it twice.
Yeah. I wasn't really. I was not really paraphrasing. You're right.
He actually said,
and look, Bane's probably not going to. Yeah. And that's fine. That happens in the playoffs. And Bane is going to, Bane is going to be better than 6 of 18 than he was in game one. So I think that's okay. And so I think that is one potential solution to this problem, is just accept it as a place that the Grizzlies will probably be able to get some points. Hope that he's not quite as efficient as he was in game one. A couple of the shots that went in don't. And, you know, he's only shooting 60% instead of 85, you know, inside the lane. But that's a big difference.
No, it is a big difference. I'm just marveling at how well he did again against down low against anybody that was not Anthony Davis.
Right. The second part of that, though, is if they start to shade really heavily towards that, you have the freedom to use Anthony Davis more on Jackson, because part of the reason I think the Lakers don't want Davis guarding Jackson isn't just the, you know, the foul trouble, the workload on both ends. It's because when, you know, Jackson is a guy who shoots a lot of threes, he's out on the perimeter a lot. If you put AD on him, you're pulling him away by guarding Tillman when Tillman's on the floor, or, you know, anybody else. You're really leaving Anthony Davis available to be a rim protector in the way that the Lakers want him to be. But if they're going to just plant Jackson down low, that's less of a concern. So it doesn't worry me too much. It's an interesting wrinkle, I think, for game two, but it doesn't necessarily worry me. And I would actually start the same way and see if, if Memphis is attacking the rim, if, you know, trying from the perimeter and all that kind of stuff, I would start the same way and make Memphis show me that it's not going to work. So I'm not terribly concerned about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, when Rui,
this is the guy who picked the Memphis in six. So if I'm not concerned about it,
I mean, like I said before, when Rui, I think particularly Rui, but also Vanderbilt to some degree, when they were defending Jaren Jackson Jr., 15 feet it out, I actually thought they did fine, particularly Rui. I thought they did a good job, if nothing else, preventing him at least sometimes from getting to the spots he wanted to. It was more once things...
when he got into the low post like, and really had
position... He's just too big for him.
He was just big. And like, you know, LeBron James, a big, strong fella. But Jaren Jackson Jr. is bigger.
Now, what I will say, though, because this was something that was coming to us either in the comments section or especially on Twitter at Cam Brothers.
There's been too much of this.
Yeah. People upset at old Darvin spam or Darvin scam that, as somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I apologize for not giving this person his name. I don't,
you know what, you shouldn't, because the suggestion is so stupid. You don't want,
yes,
you really shouldn't name check this person.
Crazy, there's two guys on the bench at 6'10 and 7'1 with zero combined fouls, referencing Tristan Thompson and Mo Bamba. And we're seeing a lot of people wondering why Darvin Spam or Darvin Scam won't play those guys. And like, look,
how about Darvin Sham? It's sitting there for you people.
That's true.
It's right there.
Dusting off Mo Bamba, who has not played much of late and is a bad post defender on top of it, and Tristan Thompson, who has not played an NBA game in over a year.
Tristan Thompson was playing in like Guam 6 months ago.
Like, look, Mo Bamba could maybe get some run if like a specific matchup dictates it, or there's foul trouble, there's like something necessitating this. But you don't just throw those guys into the fire because of Jaren Jackson Jr., because six fouls or because size. That's not how this stuff works. And yeah,
I got a few things to say about that.
And another suggestion on Twitter asking why not just play Mo Bamba and AD together for, you know, the best of both worlds, paint protection, inside out game. I got a question for you, Brian. I want you to guess the 88 minutes that Mo Bamba has played for the Lakers this season for nine games. How many minutes of those 88 do you think have been with Anthony Davis?
Well, I'll answer that question, Andy. Before I do that, I have a question for you. What do they call Darvin Ham around Thanksgiving time?
I don't know.
Darvin Yam. I'm going to say it is no more than four. I'm willing to bet. It's probably zero.
It is zero.
Yeah.
They have played 0 minutes together. I ran the data, two-man lineups on both NBA.com and Cleaning the Glass.
Just in case something was wrong, nothing comes up. I'm glad
they have not played together. You don't just throw them together in game two of the first round of the playoffs.
It's not a buddy comedy, people. A couple other things. I'm glad the Lakers traded for Mo Bamba. I think it was a good trade. I think he has things that he can offer to the team. I hope they bring him back, if for no other reason than I want his $10 million on the payroll. Mo Bamba is a terrible post defender. He's a pretty good weak side shot blocker and like rim protector in that way. He's a terrible low post defender. If you think Mo Bamba is going to stop Jaren Jackson Jr. in the post because he's tall, you are sorely mistaken. Second thing about that, I also really get annoyed when people say, oh, you've got guys sitting on the bench, you've got six fouls with those guys. Fouls are bad. You don't want fouls. You don't want to just start fouling guys left and right. And so, like, because those put the other teams in the bonus. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a really good free throw shooter. So that doesn't help either. So the part of the reason the Lakers are effective defensively is because they don't put teams on the line. They defend without fouling. And sometimes that means easy buckets or whatever. But in the aggregate, you only give up, if you give up 10 fewer free throws a game than you otherwise might, three open buckets doesn't hurt you very much. So no, don't put Anthony Davis and Mo Bamba together, and definitely do not dust off Tristan Thompson unless, people have died. I mean, honestly, I don't care how many centers I'm down. I would go small, aggressively small, before I would play Tristan Thompson in a playoff game. I mean, I'm not doing it. Yeah. So, all right. Let's get into this defensive player of the year thing, because in a series where Anthony Davis is in the middle of it, both from a performance standpoint but also a perception standpoint, lots of really interesting stuff are revealed by this voting and how it came down. We'll get to it next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Prize Picks. And Laker fans, if you have not signed up yet for Prize Picks, you're missing out on daily fantasy made easy. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. More NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. They offer the superstar players, the bench players. Just pick 2 to 6 players. Predict whether they will notch more or less than their Prize Picks stats projections. And you can win up to 25 times your money. And Prize Picks offers projections on everything from MLB to PGA to disc golf. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. Safe, fast withdrawals. And for game two against the Grizzlies, LeBron's point projections currently 26.5. Anthony Davis's rebounds 13.5. Austin Reeves 4 for assists. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com. Sign up, play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. Again, don't forget that promo code Locked On at the sign up for the instant match. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you don't know what you're missing.
Thanks again for everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen every day. Everydayers, reminder, everydayers, tomorrow on the show, Howard Beck. the great Howard Beck will be joining us to get you ready for game three. Andy, before we get to this DPOY conversation, you know what they call Darvin Ham when he's visiting the Smucker's factory?
Darvin Jam.
Darvin Jam. That's right. Mm-hmm. I am so excited that he has a name with so many things that rhyme with it.
I am terribly unexcited.
Yeah, too late.
I know where this is going.
Oh yeah. No, this is right up my alley. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've got a few spare subscribers now too that we can afford to give away. All right. So if you missed the news, Jaren Jackson Jr., no surprise at all. That's not nice. No surprise at all. Named Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. Widely expected that he would win the award. What was interesting to me, Andy, is that Anthony Davis received a grand total of no votes. Zero. 0.0. So, it was kind of an interesting voting. Marcus Smart, who I believe won last year, didn't he? Apparently is not very good at defending anymore. He didn't get a vote either. It's a strange award, but to not see Anthony Davis anywhere in this voting, got some people's attention. Why do you think this happened? I have some theories myself.
I think he is being penalized for missing a certain amount of games. Which I know you're going to bring up, Jaren Jackson Jr. has missed games. He has not necessarily played a ton of minutes between foul trouble and being limited a couple times coming back from injury. I think he is being penalized in part because the team's success pre-trade deadline was so non-existent that you didn't start even thinking about Anthony Davis for this award because his team was struggling to get three games below 500. And generally speaking, unless you're talking about rookie of the year, award season does not involve players who are on teams below 500 or often below like a 5 or 6 seed. And I think also with Anthony Davis, there is just the narrative, and I'm sure we have been guilty at times, at least, of perpetuating this. I hope not unfairly, but just of the idea of always wanting more from him. And a player that you are always looking for more from will often seem like he's not giving you enough. And that, again, can hurt you come award season.
Yeah, it's just, you know, for reference, Jackson played 63 games to AD's 56, but AD actually played 100 and something more minutes. So he was on the floor more. So, which is an interesting, you know, we tend to look at games with these awards, you know, the new rules in the NBA, 65 games. And we're talking about minutes, but it's, you know,
one
amount of games.
One last thing, by the way, that also just popped in my head right now that I'm sure really hurt AD. It's
was
not
it something
just
that rhymes with ham.
No, mercifully. It's not just that the Lakers spent so much time below 500. That period where they were below 500, their defense was god-awful. So it's not even just that he was on a bad team. He was on a bad defensive team. So that is also going to negate Anthony Davis in the Defensive Player of the Year race, despite the fact that post-trade deadline, the Laker defense was incredible, and he was the backbone of it.
Yeah, and I think most of what you're talking about is sort of where I was going with it, too. It's not just, you know, AD, Jackson missed a lot of his games at the beginning of the season, coming recovering from injury, so he played, once he was back, I think the perception is that he was healthy and available, whereas AD missed games in the middle. And I think that sort of, he just kind of went away, and then, oh, he's injured, and therefore isn't going to win any awards this year. It kind of gets decided. I think Defensive Player of the Year is a strange award where we're still not great as sort of a basketball media, as you know, at figuring out really who the best players are defensively, because the metrics are less definitive on the defensive side as they are on the offensive side. So a lot of this gets tied into offense, you know, how well they play offensively, what kind of leap guys make, what kind of story. So, you know, it's not uncommon, you know, to have narrative and storylines influence ways that awards are given out. But I also just think that, and this is what makes Davis so fascinating in this series, he's I think it gets to that thing you kind of, to like what you're saying about people kind of expecting and wanting more and the standard being really high. It's not that it kind of results sometimes in him just not being thought about at all. Cause it's not like you can look at him and say, oh, he's been garbage. Like, you know, what happened to Anthony Davis? Like we say, what happened to Ben Simmons? You know, like where the fall off is so dramatic. It's not that he's, but it's, he just can't stay long enough in the realm that people think he should be in. And he almost just doesn't get talked about at all. And
well, he gets talked about, but he gets talked about through the prism of why can't he stay on the floor, street clothes, nicknames, you know, can the Lakers eventually hand him the baton? Do they need to find someone else? Do they need to trade him? Like whatever. He gets talked about, but not in ways that often result in winning defensive player of the year, but it's not like there's no conversation about Anthony Davis.
And just, and the conversation sort of gets sort of established and then doesn't change. It's like when Russell came into the league and Emmanuel Mudiay had like four great games at the beginning of his rookie season. Everyone's like, well, the Lakers blew that pick by picking Russell instead of Emmanuel Mudiay.
D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. D'Angelo Russell instead of Emmanuel Mudiay. And it's, you look 15 games into the season, it was very clear that D'Angelo was having a better rookie year than Emmanuel Mudiay. And certainly now Mudiay is not in the league. I mean, so the decisions kind of get made, and why I think this is such a critical series and such a critical playoff, and why the halftime conversation that we kind of referenced for Monday's show, where Stephen A was just saying like what everybody else was thinking, like, A dominant playoff puts Anthony Davis back in that same conversation as it was after the bubble, when people were like, is he as good as Giannis? Is he better than Giannis? Like, that was a conversation people were having, and it wasn't crazy. I didn't think the answer was yes, but like the conversation wasn't crazy. And at the very least, he can kind of get himself back into that sort of space. Maybe not, is he better than Giannis, but put the stuff about what he can do as a superstar to bed.
I think in a lot of ways with AD, and whether you're talking about Laker fans, whether you're talking about NBA media, maybe even in the, you know, quote, a few good men in places, you know, we don't talk about it, parties, you know, the Lakers organization themselves, you have a hard time attaching that firm belief to Anthony Davis. Because it always just feels like a shoe is going to drop.
Lucy's going to pull the football away. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you and I talked about, and we actually said this after game one, talking about Stephen A's conversation. And that, like, when Anthony Davis has played this year, more often than not, he has been very good. He started out slow, then he really started cooking, and he was playing at like an MVP level. Then he got hurt, missed a bunch of time, came back, took a few games to get rolling again, and then he was playing like a two-way monster. Like, on balance, I would say 80 to 85% of his season this year was really, really good. But the time that he missed matters. And for this particular team, there's the overarching question of what does that mean when he is attached to LeBron James, who's 38 years old, in season 20. Like, a lot of the issues with AD go beyond AD. Like, if he was attached to prime LeBron with these same absences, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. You would just be saying, look, man, as long as AD is healthy for the playoffs, I don't care. Whatever. You got prime LeBron, prime AD, let's rip it. It's different now. So that's part of what colors this conversation too. Unlike, I mean, with Giannis, for example, I mean, Giannis, for the most part, people expect he's going to be on the court. So you can focus on that greatness. Like, Joel Embiid, I think, has at this point shed the injury prone tag.
Yeah. So if he's not playing most of the time now, it's, you know, preservation, it's maintenance.
Right. So people talk about him through the prism of greatness. Like, Nikola Jokic never gets hurt. So he's always talked about through the prism of greatness. Like, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is starting to rise up there for the most part, unless OKC is shutting him down for fandom reasons, he's out there so you can focus on the greatness. With AD, there's always just so much other stuff that I think, fairly or unfairly, keeps people from sometimes appreciating how damn good he is.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but it is, it's one of these things, and I don't think it's like malicious, but I just, you know, seeing this voting was, it was just another example of the weird place to me that AD occupies in sort of the national basketball conversation. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go see the show. Again, a reminder to all the everydayers and everyone else that Howard Beck, the great Howard Beck, will be joining us for Tuesday's show, Andy. But before I let you go, what do you call Darvin Ham when he goes to see a DC comic movie in the movie theater?
I have no idea.
Darvin Shazam. Yeah, it's fair. All right, we'll see everybody Wednesday.